anything.
Oh, are they? Sorry, I retract all previous statements. Mr. Lash is doing very well.
Hey, could you move over?
Hi, how are you doing?
How about Davey?
Oh, I'm doing great, Danny.
Ready?
How you doing, Dan?
See you.
How do you see, Dan? Veterans interviews.
Hi, Dan.
Never mind.
We'll call to order the joint hearing of the House Public Safety Policy and Oversight Committee, the House Crime Victims and Criminal Records Division, the House Public Safety Finance Division, the Senate Public Safety Budget Division, and the Senate Judiciary Committee. Good morning, and I want to thank everyone for being here as we look at this serious and troubling issue surrounding the Metro Gig Strike Force and the details of the Lugar and the Office of the Legislative Auditor's Report. Maintaining the public safety of our citizenry is one of the highest charges of the state legislature, and by the same token, our oversight capacity as a legislative body requires us to make sure that programs like the Metro Area Gang Strike Force that we fund and oversee are actually serving the purpose for which they were intended. Legislative committees here today are committed to a thoughtful, fair, and bipartisan discussion of these issues. Gang prevention efforts remain critical to the metro area and our state as a whole, and we must maintain a priority of both law enforcement and the legislature to take care of these issues. Throughout the fall and into the 2010 legislative session, we will continue this public conversation. A great deal of our focus will be on repairing the public trust, and we will continue to meet and seek input from the law enforcement community, community leaders, legal experts, and advocates. We all recognize that what we're discussing today is serious, sensitive, and quite volatile. It is not our intention to lay blame or point fingers, not to further inflame an already incendiary situation. We recognize that the actions that occurred in the Metro Gang Strike Force do not reflect the overall work of all law enforcement, and under no circumstances is it appropriate to paint a broad picture based upon the actions of a relatively small number of individuals. Our common goal as we move forward is to advance a responsible resolution to these issues, determine how to ensure the highest degree of accountability moving forward, and to make certain that a similar situation will never happen again in the future in Minnesota. So with that, members, this is the first of a number of hearings and a number of issues that we will be dealing with. And so the first thing we'd like to do is hear from the commissioner about how he has worked to implement the recommendations of the Office of the Legislative Auditors and the Lugar recommendation. Please come to the table and state your name for the record and go ahead.
Madam Chair, Chairs plural, Michael Campion is my name, Commissioner of Public Safety. Your question, Madam Chair, again, was more specifically.
Please go ahead and tell us where you are in the implementation of the Office of the Legislative Auditor and the Lugar Report recommendations.
Madam Chair, members, we have had an awful lot of discussions with an awful lot of people, including, I think, perhaps a little bit of some legislators. It is a achievable task to come up with an alternative plan to achieve a couple of different goals: to implement Mr. Lugar's recommendations and Mr. Noble's recommendations, also to come up with a plan that legislators and chairs of committees that have oversight is part of our overall goal, to come up with a plan that local law enforcement in the seven-county metropolitan area in particular will choose to participate in, because we certainly cannot force them to participate in a plan if it doesn't serve their communities and they don't wish to participate. Certainly other considerations, if there's federal burn grant money, there's certain things, certain requirements from the federal government, for instance, the governor's office, a number of different stakeholders and people who have an interest in this plan has taken some time. We are quite close. I have a meeting next week with Primarily the four chiefs and sheriffs and some other representatives scheduled for next week. We do not have a specific template or plan that we can lay out or a diagram to show what this looks like. It certainly will include all of Luger's recommendations, Mr. Luger's recommendations and Mr. Noble's recommendations. We have some principles in mind. You have, I think, a letter that was sent to Mr. Sheriff Rodney Barsh, the chair of the Oversight Gang Oversight Council, dated September 1st, where I make a reference to a letter that was sent 2 years ago, citing the fact that there, at least in our opinion, collectively at the Department of Public Safety, we have too many task forces in the seven-county metropolitan area, and to use the effective and efficient use of not only money from the state legislature but federal money, we need to pare that number down and be more effective in our sharing of information and our collaboration. I hope I'm not rambling on too much, Madam Chair, but taking all those considerations into account, I think we're fairly close in concept. We will have a significant milestone met next week when we talk with chiefs and sheriffs that are impacted, and I hope within the next several days that we can provide you with something that that you will find meaningful.
Commissioner Campion, how is it that you intend to keep the legislature abreast of these issues and the status of what you're doing throughout the process? Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, I think I'll just find the four chairs and have a meeting with you and say, here's what we're proposing and here's what local law enforcement, the seven-county metropolitan area, agrees to participate in. I don't think it'll be anything more mysterious than that. Be as straightforward as it can be.
Commissioner Campion, did you have a presentation that you were planning to make today, or did you just want members to ask you questions before we move into especially the special master process and appointment?
Madam Chair, I do not have a prepared presentation. I would anticipate just answering questions that were on the mind of legislators.
Representative Kramer.
Well, Commissioner, so I guess I'm not tracking like what the strategy is. Maybe you could just reiterate it a little bit. So you're saying several things that, in your opinion, which I don't disagree, that there's too many strike forces or task forces in the metropolitan area, and then I'm trying to figure out how are you meeting with chiefs and sheriffs currently to try to figure out a strategy for coordination, implementing the recommendations by Mr. Luger that there not be a standalone. I mean, how are you going to present to these committees a strategy so we can ensure that the metropolitan area is fighting gang activity and in a coordinated way and an accountable way so the kind of behavior that happened with the gang strike force doesn't happen again?
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Representative Paymar, I have not met with the primary chiefs and sheriffs in the seven-county metropolitan area that will be impacted. As you know, the seven-county metropolitan area were impacted by a letter that was sent on September 1st holding off funding. So there's no funding that's going out to those, presenting any opportunities for funding for those agencies in the seven-county metropolitan area until we come up with an overall strategy. That strategy will include all of the recommendations of Mr. Nobles and all the recommendations of Mr. Luger. Again, we have been formulating a plan. Those are the core principles of that plan. I'm going to meet next week with the sheriffs and chiefs that are impacted by it. That is the earliest opportunity that they had to meet. If I could have met with them this week, I would have met with them. But I felt it was important to get all of them together so they all hear the same thing and we all attempt to come up with a strategy that meets their needs and accomplishes the goals that I just mentioned.
Representative Paymer.
Well, just a follow-up question then. Does the Metro Gang Strike Force Advisory Board still exist?
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Representative Peel, they have met on some issues. So my understanding is they exist to the extent that there are some issues that board has been asked to weigh in on. We at Public Safety haven't asked them to weigh in on, but they exist to that extent.
Madam Chair, if I can just follow up on that. I was actually surprised. I mean, that they still exist. I thought that when you made the decision to close down the Metro Gang Strike Force, that the advisory board would also be closed down. I mean, what function is it serving?
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Representative Paymar, or Chairman Paymar, I think you might be referring to this League of Minnesota Cities special master issue that the advisory board weighed in on. That's the last action that I understand that they have taken. I think they were representing the cities and or perhaps the counties that were impacted. I wasn't involved in that process, but they were asked to weigh in on that process, and they got together and they weighed in on it and voted to go with the Office of Administrative Hearings as an alternative to someone else appointing a special master. To that extent that they have met and they do exist, they certainly aren't acting on any other policy or financial issues related to the Metro Gang Strike Force or any other issues that may arise.
Representative Paymar?
Madam Chair, Commissioner, I just don't know why they still exist. I mean, it seems to me that when you closed down the Gang Strike Force, this board should have been closed down also. This was the board that ostensibly was supposed to be responsible for the activities of the Gang Strike Force, and you've shut that down. Officers are being investigated, but the very board that had oversight still exists. I don't get that. How is that possible?
Commissioner Campion.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Chairman Paymar, there is a joint powers agreement. It's a joint powers entity, the existence of that board. They felt, I believe, that they had some legal issues or some other issues that they needed to address. I can't speak for them. I'm only assuming that this is the reason for their action and the fact that they met. We did not call them together at Department of Public Safety. I mean, if they want to meet, I suspect they can meet. They, to the extent that they have any influence over the Metro Gang Strike Force, which doesn't exist, as you quite correctly pointed out, I can't say anything more than that. If they felt a need to meet on this other issue, it was up to them to meet.
Well, Commissioner, on the last question, maybe we can talk about it at some other point here, but it seems to me that this entity should be closed down just like the Gang Strike Force should be closed down. I believe that the department has the authority to do that. And I don't know why they're operating. I don't know why they're functioning. And to me, they should be, if we're really trying to get at accountability here, this board should not exist until we come up and you come up with a new model for whatever multi-jurisdictional task force will be created in the future. I'm just a little stunned by it. I see that Mr. Shaver is still the chair of the strike force. After our last legislative hearing, Commissioner, he was on the press saying that it was the legislature's fault for not adequately funding the gang strike force. I mean, I don't know that we want, you know, this advisory board to keep functioning in whatever capacity they're functioning. So if I have anything to ask, close this entity down, close this advisory board. They should not be functioning.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Chairman Paymar, to the best ability that our office can influence that, we will influence that.
Thank you.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I'm looking at the document that I think has been made available to all the members of the committee today, or the committees today. It's the DPS response to recommendations contained in the special review. And I think you have listed here about 10 items, which I believe is an update to us about the various activities that has taken place. And I'm not quite sure on my timetable. But there are specific references to things that have been conducted or is happening or has taken place in response to hopefully post the OLA report and the Lugar report. And I'm wondering if you have this document in front of you, be willing to answer some questions.
Madam Chair, Senator Mao, yes, I do.
Senator Mao.
Yes and yes.
All right. So, Madam Chair and Commissioner, the the May 28th, 2009 step that was listed here in step number one, where the chair and vice chair of the Gang and Drug Oversight Council met with DPS staff to devise a plan, that was pre-release of the Lugar report, right?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, yes.
Senator Moore.
And then, Commissioner, the second item is the appointment of the vice chair of the Gang and Drug Oversight Council as ex officio position on the Metro Gang Strike Force Advisory Board, and the establishment of a work group. Is that something that we already know about, or is this the first time I'm hearing about a work group? And who's on that work group? And it says here that they would be contemplating the future of the Metro Gang in, future of Metro Gang enforcement. Where are we on that?
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Senator, Chief Harrington is chairing a futures group. That's what they called it. Once we close that down, they were going to look at what the future may hold for task forces. They have had a couple of meetings. I have not attended. We have not had anybody from Department of Public Safety attending. That was early on. I think there probably is still some meetings going on. I think the meeting that I have next week with those chiefs and sheriffs will be an extension of that. So you kind of knew about it, but I shouldn't say it went by the wayside, but nothing has come out of those meetings that I'm aware of as of yet.
Senator Moore.
Well, Commissioner, it says here that it was a work group established to determine the future, and I'm just wondering, it's here. Let me ask this. Madam Chair, who provided this sheet to us, I guess? I want to know who this update came from so that I can ask the proper question.
Commissioner Campbell.
Madam Chair, the Department of Public Safety provided that to you. That's what it says at the top. EPS's response to recommendations contained in the special review.
Senator Ma, maybe it might be helpful for the people that are at home if, Commissioner, you kind of want to walk through the little update that you are giving to the legislature so the people at home know and understand what it is that we're talking about here.
Madam Chair, Senator, if I could speak directly to that, there was a point in time where when we closed the Metro Gang Strike Force down, and I think you recall that we were going to create a modified gang strike force, which we tried shortly and then disbanded that. That was probably in between that point in time. It just is one of the other activities that we have tried and illustrate in this document, attempting to respond to both the Lugar report, which came out after this, of course, but also Mr. Noble's report, which came out, if I recall correctly, before this.
Senator Moore.
Well, Madam Chair and Commissioner, I'm just wondering if this group is still in existence or if their work is done. Maybe as you walk through this update for us, you can tell us, give us a flavor of what the timeline is, which group was established to respond to what, whether their work is done or they're an ongoing group. And the reason for that is I think that I, for one, would have an interest if there is a group or work group that has been put together either through your office or self-organized through the board to look at the future of task forces, then I'd like to see if the legislature could have an opportunity to participate in that conversation so that we're not recreating different hearings and different work groups to look at subject areas that may already be ongoing, under ongoing discussions.
Madam Chair, Senator, to your specific question, their work is not done. They continue to meet on their own. We did not formulate that group, we being the Department of Public Safety. Again, the impacted chiefs and sheriffs, I will meet with them the first part of next week. But their work is not done. We did not organize them. They continue to meet. I don't know. And this, again, was early on. I don't know how many meetings they've had, say, in the last month or two. I think they may have had one. I'm not sure. But nothing specific has come out of there in terms of specific recommendations.
Commissioner Campion, if you'd like to just walk us through the rest of the update, that would probably be helpful.
Item three on your...
Oh, excuse me, Senator Foley.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and Commissioner Campion, it seems to me that we're asked to deal with something here that really no one had the authority to do other than the legislature. So who gave these folks or who gave them to you or to the members of the committee that you were talking about.
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, is your question who gave them the authority to meet? Is that
Senator
what
Foley.
Your question is?
Madam Chair, essentially, yes. I want to know who had the authority to give you or to give this group any power.
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, I think this group intended to meet on their own to come up collectively with recommendations that they would offer to this body or some other legislative body and or to the Commissioner of Public Safety in our office. I don't think there's anything that prohibits them from getting together, and I think what their goal was to try to come up with better public policy amongst themselves to offer as an alternative to the potential legislation to the legislature.
Senator Foley.
Madam Chair, I failed to see where the commissioner or members that are alleged to be the preparatories of the body there. So I guess I'm still not clear as to who has any authority other than the legislature to bring forth this task force and what they what they're going to do.
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, no one has authority to implement anything but the legislature. I think we've talked about that sometimes in the past when I've been here before. This group, chiefs and sheriffs, attempted to formulate some policy as a recommendation to the legislature, nothing more, nothing less. How could taking into account Mr. Noble's recommendations and at some point later on Mr. Luger's recommendations, how could the chiefs and sheriffs in the metropolitan area work together better under that framework? I think that's the only thing they attempted to do. With an idea of making recommendations to the legislature, which I think we couched early on, before we do anything, we have to come back to the legislature in order to spend any of the money that you've given us.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Campion, in terms of the advisory board members, was there a single voting member of the advisory board that was not a licensed peace officer?
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, the advisory board for the Metro Gang Strike Force?
Yes.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I believe that they were all licensed police officers.
Okay.
Representative
Madam Lesh. Chair and Commissioner Campion, it's my understanding that the recommendation that came through from the reports from the legislative auditor and the Luger report, that one of the problems was that there was no prosecutorial oversight. Is that your recollection as well?
Commissioner
Madam
Campion.
Chair, Representative Lesh, that was an observation, and I believe was a recommendation specifically from Mr. Luger that would be could be an important recommendation coming forward.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Campion, can you tell me why there wasn't any representatives of, just to begin with, outside of licensed peace officers, there was no representatives from, say, prosecution on the advisory board?
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I believe because the legislature didn't require it.
Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Campion, are you aware that, well, I guess I would start with a comment with my next question. I keep hearing I read in news articles and sometimes the press catches stuff that I don't, that we're talking all about forfeitures on this. And to preface my next question, can you tell me, are you aware of a single asset or item of evidence that was the subject of forfeiture by the Metro Gang Strike Force?
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I'm not sure I understand your question.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Campion, forfeiture is actually a creature of statute or subject of a legal proceeding whereby title is transferred. And I hear that we're talking about forfeitures and having to reform forfeiture law. but no one has brought up to me a single example, whether it was when we heard from Mr. Luger or when we heard from Mr. Nobles, that there was any piece of evidence that was actually forfeited by the Metro Gang Strike Force. Is that your recollection, or can you tell me something I'm not aware of?
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesch, my understanding was that there were items and or cash and other property legally seized. Some was seized without proper civil notice to the person whose property was seized, in terms of a legal notification of their right to challenge that seizure. I think if my understanding is correct from Mr. Luger, there was other property seized and no paperwork was produced as a result of that. So that I would categorize it in three categories. Some of it was legally seized through the federal government, the United States Attorney's Office, and or the Attorney General's Office.
Representative Lesch.
Madam Chair and Commissioner Campion, that wasn't a rhetorical question. I meant to catch you in anything, because I honestly didn't know if there was something out there that I didn't know about. And I appreciate the distinction, because that's my understanding as well, that we're talking about seizures here, which is a different creature than actual forfeiture, albeit they can be linked by the forfeiture notice as provided by the individual from whom the property was seized. So I think that's something that's important to look at, especially because I believe there was at least the Attorney General provided staff. They didn't have voting members on the advisory council. But as I understand it, is it true that 20% of these forfeitures of the assets were to go to the Attorney General's office?
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesch, I understand that the state forfeiture statute requires 10% of any money. There's a 10-20-70% split by statute. 10% goes to the general fund. 20% goes to whatever prosecutor handles it. If in the case of Ramsey County handling it, Ramsey County Attorney's Office would get that 20%. If it was the AG's Attorney General's Office, the Attorney General's Office would get that 20%, and the other 70% goes to the law enforcement agency who seized it.
Okay. Thank you. Madam Chair, Commissioner Campion, wouldn't it make sense to you that if whatever percentage, 20%, is going to a law enforcement agency or prosecutions, a prosecutor's office, that they should probably have some say or oversight on a board like the Oversight Council?
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesch, I would not disagree with that at all.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions from members? All right. Seeing none, Commissioner, if you could speak to the special master process and appointment that is going on. It's my understanding that there
are questions.
Oh, you had questions on there. Sorry, I didn't see you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I had the privilege of sitting down and having a chance to talk to John Egelhoff at some length yesterday, just because he happens to also be a Bemidji native. And as I'm sure you know, was one of the co-authors of the Luger Report. And he had complimentary things to say about your concern for this issue and initiating this investigation, but also some concerns, and I know a lot of this has already been addressed and discussed here, but related to some of the questions that have already been brought forward, it seems as though during the investigation itself, that there were only a few people who actually were encouraged by their supervisors to come forward and cooperate with this investigation and provide information. And while that may not be a legal requirement, I guess it concerns me if that is in fact the case, maybe you can't say exactly what went on behind the scenes, maybe there are reasons you can't, but if we have the same people who are making decisions about how to go forward and sort of making them in a vacuum, as has been alluded to, and so far at least, it doesn't seem like the public is seeing a lot of accountability for what already went on within law enforcement, either in terms of forthrightness, cooperation, bringing forth information, or prosecution or employment-related actions or whatever. I mean, it's really, really important, as I know you share this concern, that the public can trust law enforcement and that we have good relations there and that the people feel that, you know, they're not going to be victimized by this kind of behavior. So how can we look to the same group of people to lead the way forward when there hasn't been a lot of forthcomingness about what was going on, or at least within the metro area? Or is that an unfair characterization?
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Senator, Mr. Egelhoff would know more about those activities than I. One of the things that we at Public Safety allowed Mr. Egelhoff and Mr. Luger to do is to have really as much independence and autonomy as they could, so that they would not be influenced by our office or anyone else. So he would be a better person to answer that question than I. I have no information. If an individual officer was asked to answer some questions, I think that's the individual officer's prerogative or decision to make whether they will or will not talk. I don't know that they can be necessarily compelled by their chief or sheriff to do that, particularly in, if I understand the circumstances with which those attempted interviews took place. So I don't know that that fact is necessarily a negative indictment on the chiefs and sheriffs who had people that were participating at the Metro Gang Strike Force. I hope that's not too convoluted an answer.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. First of all, I want to make it very clear that I'm not implying that your office did anything to try to impede this investigation. In fact, you know, you were shared the concern in initiating this. My understanding is there were only a few, very few officers who were willing to cooperate with the investigation. And as you said, there may be not be legal requirements, and there are complicated legalities in terms of decisions made and how you're getting that information. But I also understand that the few people who did cooperate, I guess, were encouraged to do so by their superiors, and that those people were not within the metro area. And so if we're talking about Minneapolis, St. Paul, Ramsey County, I guess so then my question maybe is a more of a question. Is there a will among the superior officers of the people who were involved with this task force to fully hold these people accountable to the full extent of the law, or is there more of an aura of protection of fellow officers that I think was part of, obviously, what was happening within this task force that allowed this to go on for as long as it did? And then the follow, I guess, up question to that is, I think it's important to me to understand what was going on there. And then that helps to determine who can be trusted to go forward and fix this problem.
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I think there's two questions there. First, let's see. How do I answer? Let me think for a moment. Senator Olson, I will assure you that whatever we present to you, the legislature, in terms of an alternative to what exists now, will be highly transparent and will incorporate an awful lot of the features that we've talked about at some of these hearings. One of the features that's difficult to implement, for instance, is Representative Lesch's issue, and how do you get a prosecutor involved more actively than just simply go to a board meeting every couple months? One of the recommendations was a prosecutor-driven task force environment. That's easier said than done. It's easier said than implemented. I don't know how expensive that is. I don't know if there's enough work to have a prosecutor, for instance, full-time. But is it an important feature? Yes, it is. When we come up with an alternative, it will be driven by the Department of Public Safety. I can assure you of that. And frankly, counties and cities can do whatever they want in terms of task force agreements and working together. That doesn't mean the state has to fund it. If we're going to fund something, it will incorporate and it will have accountability and oversight to the extent that will satisfy these bodies that are represented here today, and again the Lugar and Nobles report. I don't know, Madam Chair, how else to really answer that question.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple more questions. One of them has to do with whether there isn't a conflict of interest when the agency involved in seizing property is able to be a beneficiary of the majority of that property, and whether that is maybe not something that should be rethought. Not, again, to condemn the vast majority of officers involved, but there's that temptation out there that can obviously become misused in the wrong situation, and whether we ought to be rethinking that. And then my other question or comment is whether anything as a part of the plan of dealing with this is involved in reaching out and repairing some of the damage with the communities involved and looking at what needs to be done to make sure that in the future people feel more comfortable coming forward and that any reports of violations or human rights complaints or those kinds of things are going to find a receptive ear as opposed to what apparently happened in this situation?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I think the Department of Public Safety has said it, these hearings, that a hearing, a fleshing out of forfeiture laws and concerns is very appropriate. I've had a couple conversations with some legislators that have some hearings on it, have an opportunity to air concerns out. I think that's very appropriate behind some of the activity that took place here. So I certainly am not objecting to that. In fact, I would encourage it. We've had forfeiture laws for many years in this state, and by and large, they've been adhered to. And in most of the places in Minnesota, and particularly in greater Minnesota, they're followed to the letter of the law. I've heard no disparaging comments about the abuse of forfeiture laws for the last 25 years in greater Minnesota, for instance. And that doesn't mean that they have been in the metropolitan area. In this particular task force, there's been some allegations that have yet to be completely investigated. But by and large, I think even some legislators have indicated to me, I'm not sure that we need to change the law. The law wasn't followed. And I think to a great extent that's true. On your second point, minority communities, frankly, that's part of this plan that we're trying to work out. I mean, there are several features to it. Prosecutor's involvement is one, and I think when we come out with something, we want to address the disenfranchised communities that were impacted by some of the activity here and include them in what our response is going to be.
All right. Next on the list, I have Senator Latz, then Representative Cornish, and then Senator Higgins. So, Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, what troubles me is that it sounds like there is at least the appearance that among some of these Metro Gang Strike Force members, it was not the rule of law, but the rule of the police that was controlling their behavior. They took it into their own hands to ignore the law, and in effect, what that leads to is a police state, at least in the area where they were operating. It troubles me a bit even more that there's at least the appearance that the administrators, supervisors, the superiors back in the law enforcement departments for these officers were not really pressuring each one that was involved in the allegations to come forward and to speak forthrightly with those who were investigating, Mr. Nobles, Mr. Lugar, Mr. Egelhoff, and whomever else was doing it. Now, I can understand if they were going to assert their Fifth Amendment rights, because that gets back to the rule of law, and they're entitled to that, too. But in other respects, it seems to me they ought to be speaking quite candidly, and so, frankly, should the other members of the Metro Gang Strike Force. I can't imagine that this was going on only among 8 members, with no one else in the Strike Force knowing or strongly suspecting that this stuff was going on. I'd be very surprised. What troubles me, that this appears to be a conspiracy of silence to some degree here. I don't like to see that. It troubles me to have to even think that way. The less forthcoming people involved in this process are, the more this becomes the appearance and the fear not only for those of us who are required to conduct oversight and accountability and to set those standards, but for the people in the community that become the victims of this kind of behavior. So I know there will be other, the investigation is ongoing, and there will be some more serious legal investigation involved as well into the conduct of these individuals. But I hope the message to everyone who knows something about this is that unless they are going to plead the Fifth Amendment, they should speak candidly and forthrightly to those investigators so that we can create the transparency and determine exactly what was going on. If we can't do that, then we are not in a position to determine what really is best required to fix it, including whether there ought to be changes in the forfeiture law or any of the state statutes. That may or may not be the answer to the question. There may be nothing more than the oversight role that these committees play for state funding. But that alone is perhaps the most important thing that we do in connection with this. And it gets to the question of 70% of the money going to the law enforcement agencies. That's a great financial incentive to pursue forfeitures, even where they may be questionable in other respects. I did have a specific question that had originally prompted me to ask to be on the list, but Senator Olson's line of questioning had given me the other concerns to express. We have in front of us a list of the task force grant funding for calendar year 2009, and it was unclear to me what the status is of the existing grants, if they've already been passed out or delivered to the fiscal agent departments or offices, and it's also unclear to me what you said was the status with regard to 2010 task force grant funding. Clarify that for me.
Senator Latz, if I might, we do intend to get to that as a whole separate section on the agenda. We do want to get to the special master because it's my understanding that that process is moving forward as well.
Hold that question.
That would be great. So if anyone has questions in particular on this first item, just kind of the update of where we are. Otherwise, we do need to get to the special master and then the ongoing funding as well. So you were next on the list, Representative Cornish.
I just got to go on for about 3 minutes here, some things that are bugging me. The attorneys here, I get a kick out of it, how you will protect a defendant's right, a criminal defendant, to the max and tell him to lawyer up. But when it comes to a cop, you expect him to blah, blah, blah his guts out. You got certain things called constitutional rights, and cops have them too. And you don't tell somebody to start talking about it when he could possibly be charged. It's detestable to some of the things that are done. Representative Lesh should counsel people here on the Garrity warning, and sometimes you don't want cops to talk. The chiefs and sheriffs have probably been instructed by prosecutors, don't tell that person to talk. Don't compel them to talk. As soon as you do, it's a Garrity warning, and you can't use anything they say in a prosecution. So it might be smart, both for the chief and the sheriff, not to have the officer say something. So don't forget that just because they're police officers, that they still have their constitutional rights. And then you go on and think, how are we going to have faith in this system any longer? Well, it's the same reason you have faith if you're Catholic Church and you go back, even though that the priest is molesting the altar boys. It's the same reason you have faith in judges, even though they squander and use somebody's property that they've been entrusted to take care of. You don't just give up on cops. You don't give up on judges. You don't give up on people in tanning booths because somebody peeks over the top, or somebody that takes advantage of their client, a minister that betrays the confidence. I mean, so don't give up on police officers any more than you would in any other aspect of the community, and remember that they have rights, and don't expect them to just spill their guts to a prosecutor or anybody else, and sometimes it's a wise decision not to compel them to talk. Let things take their normal process. Let the chiefs and sheriffs do their job. There's a lot going on behind the scenes that you have no idea about, and Garrity warnings and Tennyson warnings and data privacy. you can really screw up an investigation by telling the cops to, you know, blab everything. There's a lot of them probably that would like to say things that aren't. So just a word for the wise, I guess. And I'm not defending any of their actions. What they've done is really bad here and it's put a mark on law enforcement. It's not a mark that's going to stay. You got to remember that 99% of the cops out there are good people that do things right every time. And now because we got 0.1% that screwed up, now they're going to have a bad name for the next year or two. And every time the legislature meets, they're going to have some idiotic legislation probably that's going to cramp things way too far that the cops can't even act on the street anymore, which is the normal reaction. So that's my speech.
Okay, next on the list is Senator Higgins and then Senator Ortman, but we do need to also get to the special master, so Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, I had a couple questions about the work that the upcoming meeting you have scheduled with the chiefs and the sheriffs about going forward. Do you envision coming up with one plan and recommending that to the legislature, or do you envision two or three options that the legislature can look at? Do you envision a plan to go once again back to a standalone sort of organization, or are you just starting from the premise that it will be under the auspices of the Department of Public Safety or the BCA or some sheriff's office or whatever? Can you talk a little bit more about some parameters that you might have developed on where you see the some organization going forward?
Commissioner Campion.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, perhaps a framework for legislation that would allow for some flexibility, but no standalone entity, any task force entity would be under the umbrella, under the direct jurisdiction of something other than the Department of Public Safety, but a particular sheriff's office or a particular police department or some combination thereof, but a particular department. One of the Mr. Luger's recommendation is that This template of a standalone organization is a failed model, and so we're not in any way going to recommend that. The Department of Public Safety will have very specific role. I don't know if you want to put that necessarily in statute. It probably would be perhaps better served in the RFP process, but certainly statutorily, the Department of Public Safety would have very specific responsibility. And we would offer that to this body as a suggestion.
So it sounds like you would put it out, more or less, put it out for bid to sheriff's departments or police departments for who would be the fiscal agent, the controlling body. I don't know what the right terminology would be.
Madam
Commissioner.
Chair, Senator, you have the right terminology. That, yes, those components would be part of the RFP process. And people would have to be in a competitive environment in order to get money. It's not going to just grant money. You know, that's the model that we've always used, whether it's for crime victims or whether it's for task forces. It's an environment that works, and it makes people rise to the top, and they have to justify why they need the money and what they're going to do with all those kinds of things. Yeah, we would continue with that type of process.
And yes. Then, Madam Chair, would Commissioner, would it be something that a joint powers agreement would be done? Do you envision all of the counties in the metro area being part of it, all of the jurisdictions? You know, we already have task forces from Anoka, Hennepin, Dakota, who's it. Do you envision that they will stay separate from the new entity that you're proposing?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator, I'm not sure. But a joint powers agreement for those that want to participate, yes, that's a vehicle that seems to work well, and it has worked well for many, I don't know, 20 over 20 years, I think. So that mechanism works well to the extent that those people who want to participate can participate.
Thank you.
All right. Next is Senator Ortman and Representative Mullery, and then we're going to move on to the special master.
Madam Chair, my question related to the funding for 2009-2010, so if you'd like to defer that until that topic comes up, no problem.
Great. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I had thought that we were going to get a few questions answered that I think are really important for us right now because other task forces are still going on. I'm not trying to get into specifics of who went wrong or whatever, but just with regard to the whole issue of the forfeiture, don't we have procedural steps that are to go through like we do on evidence, chain of control on evidence and things like that? Are there no such things like that on forfeitures, or weren't they following them? And who is watching this as well as other task forces? We have task forces still going. So my understanding, I had thought DPS was looking into those. I remember a year and a half ago there was a question on one of the other, I won't name them in here, of the seven. And I remember DPS staff saying, well, they're not getting their report done to show that they're doing something right. Is a DPS, or was, now I'm hearing that the Ramsey Sheriff was the one in charge. Do we have procedures? Who is watching that as a staff? What about on the other gang strike forces around the state? Is there somebody in charge, or could we end up with the same thing, 6 months from now or whatever?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Mulry, there's only one other gang strike force that's not a standalone, but a specific gang strike force. It's up in St. Cloud. They're a small task force. During the audits for the last couple years, the report cards, as we've described them here, those report cards, particularly in Greater Minnesota and even some of the metro gang metro task forces in the suburbs, and even in the metro, they have gotten very, very high marks. They've been very receptive to auditing and review and suggestions and training and meetings and collaboration and all those kinds of things. There's nothing to indicate that we have any of these problems in any other task forces throughout the really in the entire state of Minnesota. Most of those, virtually all of those every one of them is not a standalone task force. It's under the governance of a particular law enforcement agency, either a police department, more often than not, I think a sheriff's department, but they have very aggressive boards that meet and do the kinds of things that one would expect a board to do. Almost all of them have prosecutors that are on the oversight boards that are very involved, look at all kinds of activities to include forfeitures. I know that we put, since the Nobles report came out, we have put training on for every task force commander and board members to ensure that they are following the procedures that they're expected to follow. Mr. Nobles put an extensive presentation on, and I was part of that at the beginning. And literally every task force commander was there, and literally every board was representing the entire state of Minnesota. And Mr. Nobles detailed the problems, what went wrong, what they need to do, what their responsibilities are. I think we have done collectively, not only Department of Public Safety, but the other task force boards and commanders have been very diligent in their accountability and their oversight, and they continue to monitor the activities of those task forces around the state.
Commissioner, if we could move to the implementation of the special master and appointment process. I believe that is something that the legislature has wanted to give some input into and get an update about.
Madam Chair, let me just say about the special master. I know I was here before and we talked specifically about a special master. That recommendation came out of Mr. Luger's report and one of his recommendations. It made tremendous sense. It could expedite the return of property to those who were property and or money was taken either inappropriately or in a non-civil or legal manner. We have been informed by the Attorney General's office that really the Department of Public Safety really doesn't have the authority to do that. As an alternative to that, I know Chairman Paymar might not like to hear this, but the Advisory Board of the Metro Gang Strike Force, along with the Department of Public Safety, the Minnesota Attorney General's Office, and the League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust has agreed upon a process with which the Office of Administrative Hearings will handle that process. And they will have if they have not already assigned a judge, which will, as I understand it, and I'm not familiar with this process, will act in the same or similar capacity as a special master.
Commissioner, it was my understanding that you were going to lead the discussion about this, but that the office was going to be here, and as someone from the League of Minnesota Cities here as well, it's my understanding they play a role and that they can answer questions about this process. Is that correct, Commissioner?
Madam Chair, it's my understanding, yes.
Okay, if they could please come to the table, because I'm certain that we have questions about that.
Judge Krause?
Is Judge Krause here as well? It's my understanding. Yes. Okay. So if you'd like to lay out the process for us, how this is going to work and how we're going to move forward. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Doug Gronley. I'm the claim manager at the League of Minnesota Cities, and I work with the insurance program of the LMCIT.
Can I get you to spell your last name for me,
please? Sure, G-R-O-N-L-I.
Thank you. Go ahead.
We are not a special master, and we do not serve in that capacity. We were contacted by Corey Land, the attorney representing Metro Gang, and became part of the discussions that took place between the Department of Public Safety, the Attorney General's Office, Metro Gang Strike Force, and the insurer of Metro Gang, that's LMCIT, us, to try to figure out how to implement a process to respond to the recommendations made in the Lugar report that suggested that the property that was improperly taken by Metro Gang be returned to the rightful owners. That's what we're working on.
Okay. And so could you tell me how it is that, you know, someone has a claim, they think their property was taken? You know, how does the process work? Go ahead.
Well, as you know, we just reached an agreement with Metro Gang on the 17th of September to begin this process. We're still laying out the foundation for the process, but I can tell you where we're at right now. We are developing a hotline for anyone who believes that they've been damaged by activities of Metro Gang to come and report their property lost to us. We will take that information. We will digest it. We will communicate further with that individual making that report, receive all the information that they have, compare that information to what might be available from Metro Gang files, and then eventually get through the process of meeting with those people, trying to come to some agreement and resolution of their loss. We will compensate them for their loss of property when we reach an agreement with them what that loss is.
Okay, and in the event that there is not an agreement, is that, it's my understanding that that is when the next process gets into
place? Yes, Madam Chair, and we don't know which of these cases that we're going to be able to resolve and which we're not going to. Assuming that we won't be able to reach resolution on every one of them, we will refer them to the Office of Administrative Hearings and to an ALJ there for a further hearing of that case. The individual that presented their case to us will be able to present their case to the OAH, and they will come up with a decision. And even at that time, if the OAH makes a determination that the property owner still is not satisfied with, there is not a binding process that exists here. They are still free to pursue other possible avenues of recovery, a lawsuit, an appeal, whatever the case might be.
Would you like to address the step two of this process? Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Raymond Krause, and I'm the Chief Administrative Law Judge and Head of the Office of Administrative Hearings. As Mr. Gronley indicated, we were asked by that group to look at whether we could provide that service for, in a sense, the appeal of a decision by the League of Cities claims people. And it is something that it's a process that we can do. We have asked, I've assigned, I haven't asked him, I've assigned him, Judge Manuel Cervantes from our office to handle this. The process would be that when we would get a notice from Mr. Gronley's office that someone is in a sense, appealing the decision made by them, that we would hold an expedited hearing It'd be a very informal hearing. The idea is to make this as unthreatening and speedy a process as we can for those involved, understanding that they've already been through a government process that didn't work so well for them. We would try to have a expedited calendar, probably 1 day a month or two, depending on the volume. We just don't know what the volume would be, but whatever the volume dictates, we would have a day where we'd just have all these cases come before us. The ALJ would hear, have the file from Mr. Gronley's office, would review that file, would review any evidence that the claimant would want to put forward, and make a decision, and within a day or two at least have an answer back to that claimant. In an effort also to make it as non-threatening as possible, if someone wanted to do simply have the judge do a paper review and not actually show up in our courtroom, that's something we've contemplated as well.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Gronley, let me ask you this. Are you far along enough in the development of the process that we could actually ask you some detailed questions, or are you so preliminary in the development of what the structure is going to look like that it would be unfair to be asking some deeper questions at this time?
Mr. Gronley.
You can ask some questions. If I'm not able to provide the answer, I'll tell you that.
Senator.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Gronley, I guess I'm concerned about whether or not there's been some thought given to at what point do we bring some finality to these claims. So from a timing perspective, is there going to be a window of opportunity where we publicize that people have a certain time limit to put in their application? What does the application look like? Is there a timeline for you all to process those claims? I would appreciate a little bit more detail.
We have no deadlines for people to make claims. We are trying to establish a process that doesn't violate people's rights, that doesn't infringe on their ability to make claims, that doesn't provide a gotcha, that doesn't serve as an estoppel. That's what we're trying to do.
Senator Moore.
But, Madam Chair, Mr. Gronley, I'm also concerned, though, that then how long do we let this drag out? So what kind of time frame are we looking at to bring some finality to this issue? Have you thought about, is it a one-year process, a two-year process? How long do we let this go on if we don't impose a time frame onto it?
We have never intended to impose a timeline on people's ability to come to us and have a discussion with us about their loss. We were trying to be fair and open in the process, and we realize that sometimes people are hesitant to come forward with these kinds of issues. We want to be open and communicate with them. I don't intend to impose a deadline.
Senator Moore.
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. Gronley, then from a practical standpoint, where do we get the funding to keep this going, or where is the funding coming from for you to do the work that you're doing?
Mr. Gronley.
The funding comes from two sources. Metro Gang. Strike Force is an insured member of the LMCIT. We have an obligation to provide some response and some assistance to them. Therefore, the funding comes from there. In addition, the sums of money that we might agree upon with the folks who have suffered loss, those losses, that funding is going to come from Metro Gang funds.
Senator Moore.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Gronley, I'm concerned about that because there's a limitation, I assume, to whatever the cap of the funding is from the Gang Strike Force being insured with you. And I got to tell you, there's a limitation to where the money is going to come from for the Gang Strike Force for the compensation of these cases. So I'm not comfortable that the take back for you is to give some thought to what some of those real limitations are. I do not want at some point, as this goes on, for us to develop evolve into a point where in a budget year we're coming back to the legislature to ask for a special fund or for funds to be set aside to address these compensations. And so I would feel much more comfortable as we are at the initial stage if we could give some thought to how we could meet people's needs in a way that's respectful and responsive and being responsible for what has been perpetrated upon them, but also find some way to really bring some finality and some finite parameters to what it is that we're doing, so that we know that in a 2-year time limit or a 3-year time limit, what we're looking at is a specific cap or a specific limitation on what the exposure is, and that there will be some finality to this issue.
Mr. Bentley.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. First of all, I understand your concerns about being respectful and open and making sure that we're meeting the needs of people. But with respect to your questions about cost, first, we're not asking the state to fund any of this. LMCIT is doing that. We have no intention of coming back to the state and asking for any funding.
All right. Senator Mott, I have a whole list of folks. Can I move on? All right. Senator Foley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I'm looking at is a thought that this is a civil action, and it may be appropriate to bring it into an administrative law judge, but I think what you're looking at here is a situation where we more ought to be looking at the criminal side of it and to use, it strikes me as the county attorneys, for instance, in the metropolitan area here, ought to be bringing this before a grand jury and taking steps to determine what should be done. As far as what the League of Cities and others are dealing with, I guess I have no feeling that they couldn't do this. I question the legal authority they have in order to do it.
Thank you. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would have to say that I agree with Senator Foley. I don't understand any, and I don't even think, I think the way you're presenting it kind of gets around the issue of the fact that you actually have no legal authority to do something. As you said, you can't impose deadlines on people's rights to bring claims, because there's a legal authority that establishes a statute of limitations for their right to sue. You know, there are potential federal 1983 actions. There are civil actions within the state, and the League of Minnesota sits there responsible for paying these claims and has a monetary interest in the outcome of what happens here. And so to take the task force members and the League of Minnesota Cities, who's a potential adversarial party with the people who have these claims, and to have them determine how this process is going to work, first of all, when they don't have the legal authority to do that, and secondly, when they have a conflict of interest, seems to me to be just totally inappropriate. And I would also say, I don't think there's anything inappropriate, I guess, about an insurance company saying, or a self-insured group saying, we want to come up with an orderly way for people to handle claims. But to put some kind of authority or name on that group that implies that you're acting on behalf of a governmental entity rather than acting in your own self-interest, I think is just really a misunderstanding, creates a misunderstanding of the situation. And the other thing I would say, as long as I know I have the microphone, and I appreciate the chair giving me just a little bit of indulgence to reply to what Representative Cornish said earlier, I totally disagree that we don't have a right to a higher expectation of our law enforcement officers than we might to, say, have an ordinary citizen. That does not mean that we don't respect their rights, and that, as Representative Latt said, if someone wants to plead the fifth, they have a right to do that. But if they haven't done anything wrong, we have a total right to expect them to, in his words, blah, 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 about what happened. The public deserves that, and it does a disservice. It does a disservice to all the good officers out there who are not engaged in this kind of thing when they're not expected by their superiors to come forward and share the information they know. Attorneys have that within their bar. Other professionals have that. Law enforcement, I think, has that by, you know, ethically and legally, but it does not seem to have happened in this case.
Thank you. So, Mr. Grunley, did you want to talk about the League of Minnesota Cities authority to do this? Because I'm certain you don't want to comment on the other statements.
I don't need to comment on it. I think it speaks for itself.
Thank you. Senator Higgins.
Why isn't he responding to the other question?
Mr. Grunley, first, do you want to respond to either of the comments? Or
the legal authority.
Judge Krause? Senator Foley's questions or Senator Olson's questions before I ask a couple?
We volunteered to try to help get money back to people that had it taken from them wrongly.
Judge?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as I understand what we're trying to do here, it is not foreclosing any legal options for these people in either the criminal system or as a civil lawsuit. Indeed, as Mr. Grunley said, this is not an action that would create estoppel or anything else. It is a means to, through their insurance of the cities that participated in this gang strike force, to get people who had property taken improperly the money or property back, and it is not it is not any way trying to take authority for anything away from anyone or substitute this process for a legal process. It is still an option for one of these claimants to go to district court and file a lawsuit or anything else that they would have the right to do anyway.
So if I might clarify, this is nothing that would constitute like a settling of their claim against the Metro Gang Strike Force or the League or whoever happens to have been involved and have some legal liability. Mr. Grunley?
That's correct. There is no release, no waiver. None of that required. There are other processes already in place that are being built up, ramped up. People are being represented by lawyers and are bringing legal actions alleging violation of their constitutional rights. That's not what this process that I'm talking about here. What I'm talking about here is simply if someone had $100 taken from them and they can demonstrate that they had that loss, what we're trying to do is get it back to them. Or if their car was taken wrongly, not properly seized, not properly forfeited, we're going to try to take care of that part of the loss. Beyond that,
she's got a follow-up.
Senator Olson has a follow-up to that, correct?
Yes, and Madam Chair, I guess that's my understanding is these are public funds until they're returned to their rightful owner. And as an insurance company or a self-representative of a self-insured group, and the task force whose oversight created this situation or lack of oversight, where is the legal authority to dispose of public funds that you would have in order to create and go through this process? I think that was Senator Foley's question, and that's my question and concern. I don't see where you get that.
Mr. Grunley.
Maybe I'll ask the lawyer up here to respond to that and help me out if he can.
Well, to the
Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair, to the extent that the League is paying out on insurance claims, which is what these are, it's not public money. It's the money. It's their money. It's like any other insurance company would pay on any other claim. And so they have the authority, since they are an insurer, to pay claims. And that's, I think, what Mr. Grunley's been saying.
Madam
I understand
Chair.
It. Again, I'm not
certainly.
I'm not creating this process. I'm just got one little piece of it, but that's my understanding, and is an attempt to try to help here.
Senator Olson. Well, then we have Senator Olson, Representative Lesh.
Wait a minute,
Senator
back to
Higgins
me.
Is first. After that, Representative Bingham and Senator Latt. So, okay. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, and I'll just make this very brief and say, just in follow up to that, generally, when somebody's making a claim, they're required to sign a release. Now, maybe you're going to have an exception to the way that normal claims work for this process, but I'd be surprised when you sign a release. I mean, when you're paid a claim that you don't have to sign a release. The second thing is that it was stated that the money was going to come, at least some of it, from the Metro Gang Strike Force, and that money is public money, and I don't know where the authority would come to release that money to anyone by a process that has been developed as has been described.
All right. Senator Higgins.
Okay. I think I have two, possibly three questions, and they're fairly short. How are people going to be notified that this process is happening? You know, just having a hearing here at the state capitol isn't going to make sure that anybody still knows how to go about this. Second, do you envision that this process, well, either process, either the original League of Cities process or going on to the ALJ if that's necessary, that it could be done without having to hire an attorney to represent the folks that are there? And then the third question is based on this memo that we got a copy of, and there's some reference to the federal court and a pending class action matter, and I don't know anything about that, and if anybody would want to tell me about what that is. So first, how are people going to be notified? How are people going to know that this is happening?
Mr. Grumman.
We are in the process of preparing a press release, and we'll make notification as best we're able and try to reach as many people as we can.
Through using the information that the gang strike force gathered?
That's one way of trying to find out who these people are. We understand that there were about 50 to 60 folks who have already contacted DPS. We've asked for that list of people so that we can contact them. We've already received some calls from people who have read some of the media coverage already. And if I may,
Mr.
the answer to your question, Senator Olson, no, we're not requiring a release.
Okay. Senator Higgins.
Next question is, do you envision a process where they need to hire an attorney or should hire an attorney, or can this could be a little more?
We're trying to make this as simple and easy for people as we can. We don't see a need for them to hire a lawyer. If they want a lawyer, they can certainly do that.
Senator Higgins.
And then the last question is, what can anybody tell us about the pending class action matter?
Mr. Grunley.
I think that's the answer to your question. It's a pending class action. I'm not sure that process has actually been served.
All right. Next is Representative Lesh.
Nobody. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Grunley, I hate to beat a dead horse here, but I'm not sure I totally understand this, and I think you may have originally answered the question when Senator Mua asked it, but is it your intent that the trust lays any claim to the two-odd million lingering out there that would be under the prospective authority of a special master in order to dispose of these claims?
Mr. Grunley.
Let me try to be as clear as I'm able. The funds that Metro Gang has in its possession are funds, money, property that they may have arguably taken wrongly from other people. They've agreed with us that we will act as the vehicle to help them get that fund, those funds back to the people that are the rightful owners of it.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just by way of comment, Mr. Grunley, that's not your money.
That's right. I never said it was.
Excuse me. If we're gonna go through the chair and try to keep this on.
Thank you. And I understand you may feel this is kind of hostile, but there are, I think, many people around this table that would vigorously disagree and appreciate your willingness to step forward and volunteer to dispose of this. Because as was stated by Commissioner Campion, those monies are subject of statute that can very easily and probably would be argued to be in the process of forfeiture, whether done correctly or incorrectly, 10% to the general fund, 20% to prosecuting authority, 70% to law enforcement. So until those pending matters are resolved and arguably concurrent criminal matters, it's really premature for you to have any say at all as to where that money goes. There are a lot of other claimants to that money. So if it's your money, if it's the trust's money, fine. Yeah, I don't think that the legal authority is in question. If it's those monies that are the subject of multiple sections of statutes in these books, I think it's a very different matter, and you guys are probably going to have to go back and rethink that. Second, Madam Chair, how do you intend in this group to address the issues of crime victims' rights, partially as was addressed by Senator Higgins, but specifically with respect to notification of victims, which you had already stated, but also public data, which victims, of course, are entitled to certain privacy rights. How do you intend to handle that?
Mr. Grunley.
I don't have an answer for you.
Madam Chair, Mr. Grunley, is there anyone with whom you work that has, with whom you intend to work on this, that has special expertise in this area that can address that for us?
Mr. Grunley?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. No further questions.
All right. Representative Bigham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Higgins addressed my question of how folks would be notified of this process, but I'm wondering, kind of piggybacking off of Representative Lesch's question, how quickly do you plan on processing this? Is there a timeline, whether it's to announce that you will be starting dealing with these claims? Do you have any sort of timeline for us?
Mr. Grunley.
I'm sorry. We anticipate that within the next 2 weeks we'll be able to fully make ourselves available for the processing of these losses.
Representative Bingham.
I have no further questions.
All right. Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Grunley, I think at least the consensus of a couple of us counsel who are on the committee is that Representative Lesch is correct, that there's some doubt among Senator Olson and myself, even conferring at sidebar, if you will, as to the authority of the insurance trust to disseminate the funds which are in the possession of the strike force. It seems to me, if you were paid premiums, apparently this strike force was a separate insurable legal entity that insured itself through the League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust, either directly or through the cities or local jurisdictions. Where the officers came from, but then it would be the insurance trust, the reserves against losses, that would be the source of the funds to pay out losses. And if there was some attempt by the insurance trust to subrogate later as against the strike force's own funds for recovery, maybe you could take that route. But I don't think it's your money to give away at this point. So I'd encourage you to seek further legal advice on that before you implement any process and give any representations to potential claimants that you've got the money sitting right there, unless you clarify where it's going to come from a legal standpoint. I did have a specific question also about the relationship between the insurance trust and the Office of Administrative Hearings. Judge Krause, maybe you can explain this. Where is the funding for OAH's involvement going to come from?
Judge Krause.
My understanding is, first of all, just for members of the committee, Madam Chair, that may not know how we're funded, we have to bill our time for anyone for whom we hold hearings on an hourly basis. And that's what we do for any agency or municipality that hires us to do their hearings. In this case, we would have to bill our hourly time the same as we do for anyone else. Where that money comes from, I'm not sure. We have been told that it's going to come from through the League of Cities, through the joint powers agreement that created the Metro Gang Strike Force, which is within the statute that allows us to do those things, since it is a joint powers agreement. Specifically how that happens, I don't know. I just don't know, because I don't know how the League of Cities works. But that's where it would come from. It's not money that, as I understand it, would be appropriated or anything else.
Senator Latz.
Just a follow-up question, Judge Krause. And so the memo here indicates that the claimants would not be billed in any way or have to pay any specific fee to be a part of this process. So I assume the full bill then would be paid for by one of the parties to the process. Is that what you're saying?
Judge Krause.
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct. We don't bill individuals. We don't have statutory authority within, except for a couple of areas that are not relevant here. But generally, we have no authority to bill individuals. We have to bill, as I said, either state agencies or municipalities or joint powers entities. And so any funding that would pay for our hourly wage, our hourly wage, would have to come from that type of a source, either a joint powers agreement entity, a municipality, or a state agency.
Okay, so Senator Lance?
No, there would be no cost. So I'm sorry to get back to your specific question, Madam Chair. There would be no cost from our office to any individual who would appear before us in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, Senator Latz, and then Senator Wortman.
Madam Chair, Judge Krause, the question went a little bit a different direction. That, if I may, more concerned about the independence of the administrative process here. If one of the parties to the process is paying for the judge,
Madam Chair,
Judge Krause,
Senator, that is a problem that the legislature created when it created how we bill, because whatever agency we hold a hearing for, whether it's the Department of Education, the Department of Human Services, any agency we hold a hearing for, we bill that agency. We take a great deal of pride in our independence. We do not keep track of whether the agency that's billing that we're billing wins or loses, and we have always been very prideful about our independence from any agency that we serve, and in this case, it would be the same. We have to bill. That's the way the legislature created us. We don't have an independent appropriation of funds to operate, so that is the way we are funded. And as I would like to add, that we have been very, very mindful of our independence as an organization, and to the chagrin of some agencies, I might add. But nevertheless, that's something we take a lot of pride and care about.
Senator Wortman.
Madam Chair, thank you. It seems like maybe there's a point that's being missed here, which is the MGSF, rightly or wrongly, seized assets from individuals in Minnesota, cash, property, and it's still sitting there. The MGSF no longer exists. There's no longer a fiscal agent who can distribute those assets back to an individual that was harmed. And I think if I hear what's being proposed is that the Office of Administrative Hearings will stand in the shoes of a fiscal agent, because if the seized assets don't go through forfeiture, they have to be returned anyway to the person whose assets were seized. So I think that's what they're trying to do, is come up with a process that would be fair so that those claimants who've had money that was ending up in the safe would now have someone to come to say, I lost my $150. Somebody seized $150 or a sledgehammer or whatever it was that was seized from me. I have a claim against it. And a quick method, an objective method to return those funds, if somebody can document it, it's already supposedly part of the seizure itself is supposedly part of public information. There should have been police reports and everything else out there if this property was seized, so they're willingly coming forward. I'm not saying they've got everything in proper order here, that there isn't more research to be done in documentation and foundation and Minnesota statutes for what they're doing, but it sounds like they're trying to address the situation where you shouldn't have a claimant having to go all the way through a district court hearing and a great big to do in order to get their $150 back. Maybe that's all they want. Maybe they'll reassess if there's an additional claim. But in the meantime, we have their money. I'm not sure it's public money. At least I think it's probably their money, the victim's money. So I can see what they're doing. I see why they're doing it. I hope they'll keep working on it, continue to lay the foundation for the work that you're doing and the statutory authority and who's going to pay and maybe answer some of the questions. But I hope you'll keep going, because we do need to get that money back into the individual's hands as soon as possible if we are not going to go through the forfeiture process.
Madam Chair, to that point.
Senator or Representative Lesh.
Thank you. Senator Wortman, we do have laws in place already to handle that. It's the Minnesota Crime Victims Chapter 611A, and provides for a specific rubric on how crime victims are able to get their money back. And I think this comes down to just a simple difference of opinion as to whether, well, you know what, there was a screw-up, let's resolve this through the civil process, or whether crimes were committed here, in which case it falls under existing statutory authority for how that can be distributed according to that chapter and the Minnesota Crime Victims Reparations Board. So just by way of comment.
Senator Olson.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd just like to respond and say I don't think anyone has misunderstood what Senator Ortman just said. I think the difference is that some of us strongly disagree that whether it's well-intended or not, whether it's an efficient way of disposing of money or not, that an executive branch agency can't just take it in its hands to kind of make up the law, and that they have to be able to point to some specific legal authority to be able to dispose of public money. And especially when you have someone who's one of the parties involved, you can't just be making up the process and say this is how we're going to deal with this. We as a legislature could create, just like we did for the bridge victims, a process to distribute public money. There might be something within administrative law that gives the ALJ the right to work with the task force, although as a legislator, considering their track record, I would highly scrutinize the process they came up with, but to have an insurance entity involved in making this distribution, and again, I'm not personally trying to besmirch anyone, and perhaps, as Senator Ortman says, the intent here is just to try to be efficient in returning this money, but there still has to be a legal authority for doing that, and that was my point. I guess the other thing that I would say is that our question I have is that in the context of dealing with this as efficiently as possible, has there been discussion about how this evidence is going to interrelate with the criminal justice decision, how evidence is going to be referred for potential prosecution? I mean, is there a focus on that aspect of this this whole situation?
Mr. Grunley, is that within your ability to address at all?
Very briefly, my understanding is that the FBI has been consulted, and those Metro Gang Strike Force files are being scanned and will shortly be available to us to compare the claims.
Senator Olson, Madam
Chair,
Senator Higgins.
Thank you. That's not really my specific question was, has someone made the effort to coordinate with you if you're going to be in charge of accumulating claims from people that have a potential criminal component to them to put the process in place to make sure that information goes for potential criminal prosecution?
Madam
Chair, Senator Olson, I believe that these are the claims from people who had no criminal charges against them.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins,
Olson.
I understand that, but if someone comes forward and says someone took my money as a law enforcement officer, then that law enforcement officer who allegedly took that money has committed a crime if it was taken illegally or without reason. And so connecting that information from the victim to someone who might potentially prosecute the perpetrator, that's the process that I'm asking about.
Got it. Commissioner, if I could get you to come to the table. Commissioner, the recommendation for a special master came out of the report, the Lugar report, for which you commissioned, and it was our understanding that you were going to be looking into the special master situation. So can you tell us, are you going to be helping oversee this or making certain that the legal authority is wherever it needs to be, or who's doing the oversight of this process?
Madam Chair, I am not.
Commissioner, do you know who would be the right person to ask to make certain that we know who is doing that?
Let me answer part of that, Madam Chair, and part of Senator Olson's question. Mr. Lugar was in constant communication with the United States Attorney's Office and the FBI. And before he made this recommendation,
My understanding was, and I don't want to speak for him, but my clear understanding was that the FBI and the United States Attorney's Office agreed that the special master or having someone independent make these judgments was perfectly fine with them. That makes answers your question, Senator Olson.
Well,
Senator Moore, sorry. Did you want to let Senator Olson go? Senator Olson, go ahead.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, I guess I'm not quibbling with the concept of a special master either. We had special master with the bridge victim situation. What I'm talking about is a decision without any implementing legislation that a party involved in this who has an interest involved, the insurance pool, is going to first determine what the process is going to be without a neutral, uninterested party making that determination, and then basically screening these claims and then taking public money without any authority and perhaps dispersing it. So that's my concern. It's not with the concept of a special master or trying to expedite, but it's the fact that some interested and potentially biased parties or parties who have an interest in this kind of came up with this process without a lot of
Senator.
That's. I guess I've stated it. I don't need to keep restating it. Thank you.
Madam Chair. Senator Olson, that's not the question that I answered. You inquired about whether there was criminal matters and how this would conflict with people getting evidence back. My response was that Mr. Lugar talked extensively with the FBI and United States Attorney's Office about that specific matter. They were comfortable with this process.
Right. Senator Moore.
Madam Chair, thank you. Commissioner, I just wanted to clarify something. My understanding was that the monies that has been frozen, around $2 million or so, comprises of a number of different pots of money, and that only a portion of those dollars are the seized cash found in the vault. So could you clarify a little bit for me when Mr. Grenley talked about the gang strike force money? Can we just clarify for purposes of information for all of us what that money is and the different components I'm seeing? Ms. Beauvais shaking her head, nodding her head.
Commissioner? All right. Thank you, gentlemen, about the process. We're going to just have these final questions, and then we do have to move on to the next item. So please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Madam Chair, Jerry Bovier. I'm the Executive Director of the Office of Justice Programs. Senator Moore, that is correct. There's approximately $2 million. But $1 million is grant funds that we still maintain that have not been distributed. There's an additional approximately $1 million that are seized funds in control still of the Metro Gang Strike Force fiscal agent.
Senator Moore. Madam Chair, and to the Commissioner and Ms. Beauvais, so when the insurance group is talking about overseeing and using it as part of the funds to distribute back, they're just contemplating the $1 million of the seized funds. The $1 million of grant funds is still under the control of, is being used for that purpose. Yes?
Ms. Boubert.
Madam Chair, Senator, that is correct. It is just the seized funds that they are talking about and the appropriately forfeited funds and then the other funds.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One quick question. Is there any process going on to establish the forfeiture of all of the property that's been seized?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, that would be impossible to achieve, if I understand your question correctly.
Representative Mullery?
Well, Madam Chair, Commissioner Campion, is there no records that, I mean, you've got seized property. Somebody must have at some time been going to follow through on the, I assume some of the police at least involved intended to follow through on the forfeiture.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, yes, that's correct.
Representative Mullery.
Couldn't somebody proceed to establish the forfeiture of those?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, I still didn't hear the last part of your question.
Madam Chair and Commissioner Campion, couldn't somebody proceed to establish the forfeiture of one's property seized that they claim is forfeited?
Commissioner, it's my understanding that Representative Mullery is trying to get at, can't we forfeit the money that was properly seized and give that back?
Madam Chair, that already has taken place. I think I've talked before about three different pots of evidence, being money or property. That which was seized legally and forfeited legally, that is in a legal account. That which was forfeited or seized and forfeited, that maybe civil process wasn't followed and it may be seized, maybe seized properly, but it may not civilly be seized legally. The third pile or the third category is that property and or money, which frankly there's no paperwork on at all. Mm-hmm. I thought your question was, can we seize all of that? It's impossible to seize all of that.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery. Just one question. Commissioner Campion, the second pot, where there's some records, it looks like we maybe could, is somebody proceeding where we can do it?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, no.
All right. Further questions from members? Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Campion, is there any statute of limitations on any kind of forfeiture action? And before that, I guess I would preface the question with, I understand your perspective on the three pots of money. I have a little bit different perspective on that. I don't think necessarily that if proper forfeiture notice was given in the context of a seizure, that necessarily means that it would be upheld by a judge to be a legal forfeiture or legal seizure. So I think maybe some of that could still be in play. That said, if some enterprising law enforcement agency decided tomorrow morning to go in and file the proper paperwork to legally forfeit any of those $1 million or of the various other assets that are non-liquid, is there any limit on when they could do that, time limit?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I am not sure. I think, and I haven't read that for quite a while, but I think there is a time limit with which if I seize money, property from you, there's a certain window with which I have to notify you. And if I don't, my understanding is that property is not seized legally. Well, it's my understanding.
All right. Commissioner, if you could get that information for us as well, and if anyone is going to be proceeding with that or you believe, and just send that to this committee, that would be helpful. Members, we still need to get to the discussion on the delay of grant funding for task forces, and I believe that we had some senators that had some questions that were on hold. So, Commissioner, if you could please just lay out for the committee what you've done and where we are with that, and then we'll have some questions. Commissioner.
Madam Chair, I believe you have some documents that show the distribution of money.
If you could walk through what it is so that the public at home understands as well.
Madam Chair, the money for the Metro Gang Strike Force has been ceased. We haven't distributed any more money for the Metro Gang Strike Force. That's been shut down. The drug task forces and the violent crime task forces in Hennepin and Ramsey County and the surrounding metropolitan area, those drug task forces are still funded through December of this year. The only money that has been suspended is the money for the Metro Gang Strike Force. The RFP process for funding for 2010 has been put on hold for the Metro Gang Strike Force until an overall plan is agreed upon, and this body and other bodies represented here agree that the plan is suitable to you, and we will then go forward with the components of that RFP and that guidance from the legislature.
All right. Commissioner, I have a question as well, but I believe Senator Olson, you had one, and Senator Ortman. So Senator Olson,
Thank you.
Senator Latz, sorry. Senator Latz had the question. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Commissioner, thank you. That answers part of the question. I guess the obvious question is what happens after December 31st, 2009? Is it intended that there be some partial funding of the existing task forces to an RFP proposal so there can be at least some consistency, or does their work grind to a halt as of New Year's Eve? Is there enough time for there to be a transition or time for there to put together a change in procedure or process so that those task forces that are deemed to be appropriate can continue, or jurisdictions can consolidate and merge, and or do you really need maybe another 6 months to be able to transition this whole thing?
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, there's plenty of time. It's the middle, towards the end of September. I think I testified earlier that we hope to have a plan pretty much in principle next week. And I have a meeting next Tuesday with the impacted chiefs and sheriffs to formulate a strategy based on that on those principles. So I mean, I hope by next week we have a pretty good idea what we want to do. And the fact of the matter is, it's going to be up to this body to determine whether we can go forward or not go forward. We have the authority to spend burn grant money for drug task forces, but we don't have the money to spend. We don't have the authority to spend money for the money that we've gotten from the legislature for the Metro Gang Strike Force. I think I've testified to that time and time again. But we don't have authority to do that. We have to get the authority from the legislature. But there is, regardless of what anybody's heard, there's plenty of time to put this in place.
Thank you.
And we would be remiss, and I think this administration would be remiss, to not have that activity in the metropolitan area.
Senator.
On the other hand, we're not going to just fund anything and everything that has gone on in the past. This is our opportunity to make it more effective, more efficient, more collaborative, and more accountable.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner Campion. My question was about the distinction that you've drawn between Greater Minnesota Task Forces and the Metropolitan Area Task Forces. Why leave one group totally funded without the further review, but insist on a second standard for Metropolitan Area Task Forces? My concern is that if they don't have the funding, and you're assuring us that there's plenty of time here, and I'm glad for that, but my concern is that the metropolitan areas where we have the most crime, where these funds are needed the most. And after Minneapolis's news that they are going to dismantle the narcotics unit there, I'm concerned that we need this money, and I'm hoping that you will then address those two things. Why the distinction, and then secondly, some assurance that we're going to see this money in 2010, if there's more to say on that subject.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, it's a very legitimate question. We have had no problems in Greater Minnesota. I think I've testified before, the professionalism and the cooperation and their activities have been enhanced over the last couple of years, primarily due to the efforts of the Office of Justice Programs, training, all the kinds of stuff that's gone on. They're doing very, very well. They're accountable. They do the kinds of stuff that they're supposed to do. I would ask you this question. The seven-county metropolitan area, we have 13 task forces. Does that seem like a large number to most people? I think the citizenry, yeah, I think so. It seems like a large number to me, and it has been for a long time. The letter you have that I sent on September 1st quotes a letter that I sent back 2 years ago to the Gang and Oversight Council, stating that we thought there's too many task forces, that they need to come up with a plan to streamline and be more collaborative and more cooperative. We wouldn't be sitting here today if, in fact, that would have taken place. So now we're at a point in time where we're not going to have 13 task forces running around the seven-county metropolitan area. We're going to have a more effective and more efficient, more streamlined law enforcement environment. And we're adamant about doing that. Again, I can't make anybody force anybody to if a local jurisdiction wants to fund something, they can fund it. But the state of Minnesota, through the Office of Justice Programs and Department of Public Safety, is not going to fund that many entities.
Senator.
But I will assure you that we will have in place something that's effective and efficient. And my goal clearly is, and I was instructed by the governor, clearly not to break any interruption of service. So that will be accomplished.
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, just a follow-up point on that. Then it sounds to me like you're making an independent decision, independent of what's happened with the MGSF, to restructure your funding for task forces, that it doesn't have to do with the suggestion or concern that there was wrongdoing in these other task forces. It's entirely separate, independent review that maybe this funding could be used elsewhere or structured differently. And I'm hoping that you'll confirm that.
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, you're correct. And again, I want to couch this. I don't have the authority to say this is exactly what we're going to legislatively do. I'm trying to pull a number of parties together to in agreement, satisfying all the things I talked about before, and then coming back to this body or some other body to get the authority to do it. Again, I will remind you that you're not even in session until February. And generally, you pass legislation, unless you want to do it early, till what, May? I doubt that we can wait till May to institute something in the seven-county metropolitan area. But we need the authority from the legislature in order to spend any of that money.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, my point is that we're concerned about the confidence of the residents of the state of Minnesota, and I just want to make sure that they can have confidence in the task forces that currently exist in the metropolitan area, and that there might be a concern about the MGSF. Clearly there are, but these others are functioning well and adequately, and that your decision not to fund them or to delay the funding is independent of what you found in the MGSF.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator, that's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Paymar.
Just a follow-up, Madam Chair, to Representative Ortman's question about the other task forces in greater Minnesota. And let me preface this, Commissioner. I think that you've done an admirable job of trying to fix this problem. But I remain unconvinced, and I would like you, your department, to put something in writing as to reaffirm your earlier testimony about what has taken place vis-a-vis your assessment of the other task forces. You say they're all running 100%. You're confident that there's not similar problems going on. Well, how do we know that? You talk about the report cards. If you remember at the last hearing, Bob Bushman, who is the statewide commander, he gave a report card to the Metro Gang Strike Force and found that their work product was exceptional or close to it. So why would we then trust these report cards? So I would like you to put in writing for the committee what steps you've taken, what steps OJP has taken to make sure that the other task forces in greater Minnesota are following policies and procedures and guidelines so we can have some faith. I don't just think we can just take your testimony and say we feel fine about it, especially after what Mr. Bushman's explanation last week or 2 weeks ago, which was the lamest explanation I've ever heard before a committee, of why he did it, why he presented a report card on the Metro Gang Strike Force the way he did.
Madam Chair, Representative Payne, we'll be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Senator Moore.
Madam Chair, and members, and dovetailing on Representative Paymar's request, I want to let all the members know that that will be one of the areas for the next hearing that we will be notifying all of you about. I think you may have all read in the papers the question was asked in one of the articles. I think Representative Paymar has raised the issue again. And so we have identified sort of the beginning of October as another opportunity for us to get together. And at that time, we will be asking the commissioner and OJP to come and give us an update about how the other task forces are doing, and then also talk to us a little bit about your methodology and your evaluation method and your audit method for evaluating the performances and the outcomes of the other task forces. And I think in addition to looking at the other task forces, Commissioner, we would be interested in, and hopefully by then, maybe in early October, plans for the future of Metro Gang Strike Force, as you mentioned, will have evolved, so that perhaps you could present to us a couple of two or three scenarios of where you think that those plans may go. I think there's interest among the members here in giving some input to perhaps the different thoughts or the different scenarios that you might be developing. And then I think that there's also we might be interested in a further update on any other plans post the Lugar report that you have put into place to address this beyond what you've presented today. If there aren't, you know, ongoing conversations or ongoing task forces, in my mind, I think that these forums provide the best and the most transparent opportunity for members of these four committees or five committees to get an update on what's going on and to give the public an opportunity to hear about what's going on and for us to give one another input. And so If you could be prepared to do that, that would be helpful. And we'll get a letter to your office so that you have a clear idea of what we would like to hear at the next hearing.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, I have to apologize. I apparently have not conveyed adequately what needs to be conveyed to this body last time and this time. Several questions asked today are, what are you going to do about the Metro Gang Strike Force? I don't think it could be any more clear when I say the Metro Gang Strike Force will never be revived. The Luger report and the Nobles report had to do with the Metro Gang Strike Force. That was an aberration. All indications by report cards and anything else that any other evaluation was different than any other drug task forces, either in greater Minnesota or in the metropolitan area. Every one of the Luger reports, and to best of my knowledge, every one of the Nobles recommendations have been followed by the drug task forces and the other violent crime task forces in the metro area and in greater Minnesota, except if my recollection is true, except for one drug task force in the metropolitan area that didn't have their evidence system under a specific law enforcement agency. Otherwise, forfeiture laws being followed, report cards being adequate, prosecutors being involved on a week, monthly, quarterly, all of those recommendations have been in place in the rest of these task forces. I apparently haven't made that very clear. And we are not going to recommend in any form or fashion something to substitute the Metro Gang Strike Force. I can't be any more clear than that.
Senator Moore.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, I think that we've heard your message very clear. But the message back to you, though, is that this group of individuals have an interest in engaging in a conversation with you and the individuals that you're working with to formulate what the futures would look like. I think Senator Ortman has expressed very clearly the concerns that we all have around this table, that there's a desire for us to contemplate what the future without a Metro Gang Strike Force would look like, whether that's coming up with, I mean, there's got to be, we feel the sense of urgency that there has got to be some entity or something developed to take its place. We feel the need in the metro area. And it is my understanding that you are engaging law enforcement, the chiefs, the sheriffs, your staff, in having that conversation about what that future would look like. And so my hope is that as you engage in that conversation and the different formulas, the different plans, the different options evolve, we would like to create an opportunity to have a conversation with you about what that might look like. Now, if it's too premature, if, you know, by early October we will not be there yet, then we can shift that to a different time frame. But I think Senator Ortman very succinctly expressed it today that there is an interest around the table to try to grapple with in a timely fashion what that future might look like so that we could, as soon as possible, get on that, because we are all feeling it locally, the absence of some kind of entity that is fully functioning to do the work that was supposed to have been done by the Metro Gang Strike Force.
All right, I have two further
questions.
Madam
Chair, can I respond to that?
Commissioner.
Senator, you will have that sooner than later. Have some appreciation for the fact that if I tried to get five or six chiefs or sheriffs in the metropolitan area together to do something different than what they had already done in the past, and I went to the legislature first, you think I'd have any credibility at all? That's the only thing I'm trying to do, Senator.
Right.
And you will have it before we ever implement anything. I've mentioned that, I think, time and time again.
Thank you. Representative Mullery and then Representative Hosh.
Madam Chair, just to get it over quicker. I'll just reiterate what Senator Moore and Representative Paymer said are their concerns. I'm also concerned about the issue of getting rid of all of the seven, which seem to be functioning, at least some of them, quite well. I'm not sure that there's a reason. I just got tagged by, or my next-door neighbor just got tagged by a gang that's centered in Brooklyn Park, so that Northwest one that brings in our areas together. The gangs are working in those smaller areas. And the one last question is, what have you done to work with Todd Jones now that he's back I remember going to many meetings with him. He coordinated, actually, when he had the office before the Bush appointee took over and disbanded it, he coordinated a lot of anti-gang efforts. And so I would hope that you are working with him now that he's back in charge.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, I spent an hour with Todd Jones, just he and I, talking about the environment, what he used to, what he experienced before when he was a U.S. attorney, and what his anticipation and what his involvement would be, what he'd be willing to do now that he has been confirmed.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to address, in response to Representative Paymar's comments about the other task force out of state, I've had the opportunity to meet with responsible agencies and affected stakeholders in the St. Cloud area, and I want to make sure that they are equally as concerned as what we are with the Metro Gang Strike Force and what that means to their operations and how they're going to be looked upon by the legislature. And I think we can learn some good things from their operations. And one of the luxuries that we have if we do have future meetings is that the responsible agencies can come here and testify. And if this body is concerned with that, I would encourage that we invite them to talk to us about their concerns and also their hopes for what we can do as a legislature to build trust back into the system and accountability while making sure that the effective work being done out of state continues.
Senator Latz, then Senator Olson, and then Senator Foley, and then we're going to wrap up.
Madam Chair. This discussion is circling back around, and I appreciate it. I've been contemplating Representative Cornish's reaction to my earlier comments, and I just wanted to make sure that my point was clear. Maybe it wasn't. But we're all expressing some concern about confidence in the law enforcement, the public confidence, not only our oversight confidence, and that was the main point that I was trying to make before, is that if there's a perception that law enforcement is closing ranks, is not sharing information, is not allowing the investigation of what happened to go forward, not putting pressure on the individuals involved to speak forthrightly about it, then the public perception is going to be a decrease in confidence toward all of the task forces that are going on, all the gang efforts that are going on, and that doesn't serve us or the public safety or the community well. So that's my overriding concern, and that was why I made the statements that I did.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to also kind of follow up with Representative Hosh's comments. In our area, local legislators have been contacted by our local sheriff, and we're getting briefings on what our task force is doing. We're going to be meeting next month. I'm sure we'll be asking some very in-depth questions, but it does appear that there's a different structure in place in rural Minnesota, except as the commissioner said, in St. Cloud, perhaps, where there's more oversight by a particular agency and more accountability. And then the other thing that I, at least my perception that I see as different in the community where I live, is that we have a very active ACLU. We have a newspaper that's likely to print a letter that's sent by someone if they say that they've been victimized by, a local law enforcement. Maybe in rural areas it's easier for people to reach out and express themselves when they're being victimized. Maybe some of those issues are different. But that's why I think it's important, the comment that I had, that there had been some prior civil rights complaints here in the metro area, but that they didn't go where they needed to get the kind of investigation that would give people confidence in believing that, that this kind of thing can't go on and that they're going to have someone who will listen when they make a complaint.
Senator Foley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I'd like to know, Commissioner, would be what the FBI has done in this matter. Did they provide anything that was suitable for prosecution in any way? And what happened? Is there any report available indicating that the FBI, in their role as enforcing this, has done anything like that?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, and to Senator Latz's point, I would remind all committee members that there's an ongoing inquiry going on. I have no idea what the FBI is doing. They aren't going to tell us until they're done, but it goes on. I would also comment, Senator Latz, that there have been a couple of chief law enforcement officers that have executives that have taken some very aggressive disciplinary action against officers whose where internal affairs cases have been completed, and those internal affairs investigations, as I understand, go on. So to believe that we're at a point in time where everything else is done is far from accurate. And I think that as time goes on, what will be, will be. But it certainly doesn't seem to me to be completely over.